Hey, it's Andrew Bogish from CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
After 12 o'clock, welcome back to The Whole Show. We're live from the Allo Communications Studios. Joining me now, and I think I did much better, we have a lot more time to hang out here. We have Hugh Millen on the program, former Washington Husky, played in the NFL, Clay Millen's dad, has a radio show on KJR in the Seattle area. Hugh, thank you, my friend, for joining us again, and we have more time.
Yeah. Hey, it's always good to be with you, Brady. Yeah, it's quite a weekend in Seattle, anticipating Russell Wilson and his return, and of course, CSU, hopefully they can get on the winning track. So there's a lot of stuff going on for the football weekend for us.
Man, I really lucked out, too. Of course, we have the Clay Millen show. We do that every Monday. And we're talking about you and your radio show. And I'm thinking, man, that'd be great to pick his brain about Seattle, about Russell Wilson. So it all worked out. So we really appreciate it, because I know that's a lot of what you guys are probably talking about is the story we saw about Russell Wilson and of course the big Monday night game coming up. So man, there's so much we can get into.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's obviously the biggest topic. The Mariners are kind of white hot for the first time in a long time. But for this week, the Seahawks are it's a lot like Denver. Denver. The Broncos dominate the sports. It's a Bronco town, right? In its DNA. I think Seattle's a football town, but the baseball is kind of going right now. And the Seahawks, for the first time in a long time, there's a sense that there's a decline. Of course, we're not in Seattle market, but right now there is this nexus of what's interested in Seattle is also interesting here. With the Bronco fans.
Yeah, well, no doubt. And again, this story, and I do want to talk to you a little bit about Colorado State as well, hoping they can turn things around against Middle Tennessee this weekend. But this story, it just kind of seemed like it was unfolding throughout the week, that Russell Wilson was a little upset. What was it, in 2019, when he was working to right in the MVP mix there, didn't like the way one or two of the games went down, the way the play calling was. And then you see this other story kind of adding to that, that he kind of confirmed Seattle wanted to move him before that year, back in 2018?
18, yeah. I think that's credible. The idea that Seattle was offering the Russell Wilson for the number one pick with Cleveland. And that's going to ruffle some feathers. I mean, John Elway once got word that the Broncos were shopping him to the Redskins in a package to bring Mark Rippon to the Broncos. Of course, he had been a Super Bowl MVP and a starter in the NFC Pro Bowl. When you're a player the caliber of a John Elway, that doesn't sit well with you, and I don't think it sat well with Russell Wilson. Not that he's the caliber of a John Elway, but he certainly was among the better quarterbacks in the league, and that had to sting.
Well, and what did you make of that? I mean, because I was going back and I was looking back at his numbers too, Russ. I mean, he's always put up pretty good numbers. I love his touchdown to interception ratio. I mean, he's always put up pretty solid numbers. Seattle, for the most part, was at least in the discussion. I don't know that they were always in that window, but in the discussion. What did you make of, the idea that Seattle was kind of done with Russ, or at least thinking about life with Russ back in 2018?
Yeah, Brady, here's my take. If you go back to when Russell Wilson came in the league in 2012, the first 3 years of his career, Seattle was number one in terms of run percentage, which means, of course, the reciprocal is true. They were dead last in pass percentage. Now, that worked because the Seahawks had Marshawn Lynch. They had the Legion of Boom defense, which, by the way, is the first time a defense has ever gone four straight years leading the NFL in fewest points allowed. So they had all the markings of that. It made sense. Seattle won a Super Bowl in 2013. I know that's picking a scab a little bit locally, but and then they nearly won in 14, so life is good, right? It's a winning formula. Now, as the Legion of Boom kind of dissipates, fewer guys are playing, Marshawn Lynch's career is winding down, now there becomes a big topic in Seattle. It was let Russ cook. And I think that even made some national waves, right?
Sure.
And he even patented that phrase. I think he even put a trademark on that phrase. And so the question was, the real boiling point came in 2020. because now they said, okay, are we going to let Russ cook? And that was all the topic. At the beginning of 2020, the Seahawks start 5-0. Russell Wilson is averaging exactly 300 yards passing per game. He's got 19 touchdowns leading the league, just three interceptions. And the Seahawks come into a bye, and they're letting Russ cook, and he is making a masterpiece. And he's the front runner for the MVP. They have a bye. They come back. Then they go four-game stretch where they lose three or four. And although they're still – they actually up their passing. They're up to like 320 yards per game, and they're scoring a lot of points. But it was just nine touchdown passes and seven interceptions plus a fumble for Russell Wilson. So at that time, Pete Carroll, a defensive-minded guy, he starts thinking about, you know, when we were at our best – back in, you know, 13, 14, this is not how we looked. So he pulls in the rein. He takes Russ out of the kitchen. He puts Russ in the closet. He's not cooking anymore. And that was just too much. That was the year Tom Brady, first year with Tampa Bay. He goes to the Super Bowl, sits with the commissioner, and he's watching Tom Brady in year one with the Buccaneers kind of orchestrating, bringing in his own guys. Obviously, they're letting Tom Brady cook. And he says, "I my legacy, I'm halfway through my career. I can't handle this." So at that point, he was basically, it was all over but the crying for the relationship with Seattle and Russell Wilson at that juncture.
We're talking to Hugh Millen, who talks a lot about the Seattle Seahawks, of course, and I know you guys are really diving into this story. That's so interesting, too, because that's what it looks like, again, on the surface, but you covering this team and talking about this team so closely for so long, that's interesting when you go back and look at it and say it was because they pulled the reins back. Pete Carroll, we've all talked about it, you know, nationally, too. You hear it and say, well, they won a Super Bowl, destroyed the Broncos in a Super Bowl with an amazing defense, and then lost with, you know, kind of an all right offense. It does make sense, though. You know, I know here in Denver, everyone's like, Russell's the king and Seattle's the bad guys. But it does make sense when they look at it and say, that's not how we won. That's not why we were consistently in that championship window. We did it based on a good defense and a strong run game.
No, that's exactly right, Brady. And I kind of gave it to you from Russ's perspective. Here's Seattle's perspective. So if you go back to those years I first mentioned, like 12, 13, and 14, I just crunched the numbers this week. I don't have them in front of me. I'm sorry. But he was either first or second in the league in what's called scramble yards. Scramble is a term that an NFL play-by-play guy up in the booth, he will make a judgment. Well, that looked like it was going to be a pass play, but the quarterback elected to run. It's kind of like, you know, the guy who has the judgment in baseball, is that a hit or an error? So if you say the word scramble, that's the judgment that's made by the play-by-play guy. Russell Wilson led the NFL, and he was up around 510, 520 yards of scrambling each of those three, 4 years, and most of those years first. I think there's 1 year Colin Kaepernick got him, and he was second. If you then go back to this last year, he was at, I believe, 179, but he missed three games. If you calculate that out over 17, I think the figure was 235. I might be off by a yard or two. And that would have ranked 10th. But it's well below the leaders. Josh Allen was the leader at over 500 yards, followed by Lamar Jackson and I think Kyler Murray. But less than half of the leaders. So in the view of Seattle, and then there's that's a scramble yard. And then there's yards outside of the pocket where he, in those early years, he was number one in yards of throwing for, where he escaped the pocket. His passer rating was like the Super Bowl year. He was fifth in passer rating, first in yards on plays outside the pocket. This most recent year, his yards fell to about the median. I think about 15th or 16th. The passer rating was at 13th. So in the judgment of Seattle, this is what they saw. They saw that he was older and heavier and couldn't be quite as elusive as he had been, didn't quite create the magic. The numbers reflected it, as I'm intimating there. And then the added part of, okay, he's going to give us a $50 million bill for his services. And remember now, Carroll's thinking, we were at our best when we had great defense, we had Marshawn Lynch, and Russell Wilson was on that rookie contract, and we could spend a far greater allotment of the salary cap towards developing the team around the quarterback, not making the quarterback the hub of the wheel. So from Seattle's perspective, those factors combine to say, okay, Russ, if you want out and you want to be the chef and you want to go hook up with Nathaniel Hackett and be the center of the team. And by the way, I will add, Brady, that if you look at all the Super Bowl winners and you say, okay, make a column, these are the coaches that make the quarterback the center of the franchise, and everything revolves around them. And then you take another side and say, okay, these are the ones that kind of think more defensively. While there's a lot of Super Bowls that are won by the defensive-minded guys, there are more Super Bowls won by coaches who philosophically – I do a show with Mike Holmgren every week, 9 to 10 on Mondays. And Mike Holmgren was one of those guys who won a Super Bowl. His view, his ideology of football is everything centers around the quarterback. And if you don't have that right, you have to make that right. And so it was Russell's belief that Nathaniel Hackett has that worldview. And so that's kind of the anatomy of this disillusionment of the relationship and where Russell is now.
Boy, it's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, the whole thing, the whole storyline. Okay, so to kind of summarize that, should Broncos fans be worried that if the cooking slows down a little bit, that the Broncos decide to start letting Javonte Williams run the ball a little bit more, they're not airing it out as much, should Broncos country be a little worried that maybe we start to see some of the pitfalls that went on between Russell Wilson and Seattle start to happen here in Denver?
That's possible. I think, first of all, I think Hackett is going to give every opportunity for Russell to indeed be the hub of the wheel on this thing. I would think, now this would just be an inference, but I would think that if that same situation were to mirror in Denver, I would think Russell would think, well, okay, I've already kind of created a little bit of a dust storm in Seattle.
Sure.
Now, you know, am I going to do it again? So I don't think it's logically inconsistent to say that he was antsy to get out of Seattle to try his vision of how he wants to be involved. And then if for some reason, you're saying hypothetically, if the wheels are wobbling, would he then be equally as disgruntled? Maybe, but one could surmise that he would say, okay, maybe it's me the problem. Maybe I got to just find the best way to make this work.
How is Russell Wilson perceived now from the Seattle fan base? I mean, Monday night, is he going to get booed? Is he going to get cheered? How's that going to go down?
I think he's going to get booed more than cheered. I think that there's a perception in Seattle that he changed. He came in as a third-round draft pick, and he has always been a voracious work ethic guy, remarkable in the community, you know, going to the children's hospital. And he's going to give you, you know, if you're the owner of a team and Russell Wilson's your quarterback, you sleep well at night. He's not going to get into trouble. He's going to say and do the right things. So I think all of that remained constant throughout his career. But he became more of a diva in this sense. This is the perception in Seattle. He became more of a diva, wanting to be center of the team. And look, for the reasons we've been discussing, I'm not outright against Russell in that regard, because I think most high-achieving quarterbacks, you know, if you tell Aaron Rodgers that he's got to just be a bit player and, you know, part of a run first, play defense type of mentality, he's going to balk at that. I'm not disparaging Russ in that. I think it will be very interesting how this plays out, but the feeling is that he became real disgruntled. There was a story, for example, Seattle plays Tennessee early in the year. I think it was week two. I could be wrong. And Seattle squanders a big lead, 2-touchdown lead. The Titans come back. Now it goes to overtime. And the Seahawks get the ball first, and they go 3-and-out on 3 passes. And Russell was kind of forcing the ball down the field when there was checkdowns and what have you. And Pete Carroll just kind of in the view of many up here, just innocuously said in the post-game press conference, yeah, well, maybe we should have been a little bit more conservative, just take the check down. He kind of mentions that. Well, Russell just flipped a gasket in the building the next day. You tell him to keep my effing name out of your effing, you know, coach me in the effing media. You know, like, he went ballistic internally. And there's the belief that type of stuff didn't happen when he was a gracious third rounder. Of course, now, this is the part where the analyst in me has no business bringing this up, but just the natural human side where you try and make inferences to the best explanation, there are many that wonder how Sierra has impacted him. Because, you know, things like that video of him walking out and, he looks all snappy in that white linen suit, but now he's going to get into the car and get the limo. I'm sure you've seen that video,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of off-putting up here in Seattle. Like, are you kidding me? Like, you're the president of the United States needing the Secret Service to take you to a preseason game? Like, that, like a lot of people feel that is illustrative of how he changed.
Wow, that, you know, it's funny, Hugh. Part of my brain has been, this is part of the thing I've been worried about, not necessarily like losing sleep over it, but you know, you do see him at the big time tennis matches and all over the place, and he's got that gigantic vehicle that's bigger than the stadium. You do wonder, and you thought, I didn't remember hearing a lot of that stuff, but again, we didn't follow him that closely in Seattle, so you do see these things. Yesterday, we had a whole bit about, you know, what happens if you know what hits the fan throughout the course of this season or next season. Is Russell difficult to work with? And I guess we'll see. But this is all fascinating. My goodness.
Well, I think that it became kind of untenable. It was either Pete Carroll had to go or Russell Wilson had to go.
Yeah.
And look. I think what's so fascinating, you probably, if I'm you, I'm saying, hey, Millen, put your feet to the fire and give us a freaking opinion. Are you on more on Russ's side or more
yeah,
on
whose
Pete side
Carroll's are you
side?
On?
Right? And I would lean just 50% plus a feather on Pete Carroll's side of this, but I got to tell you, I would not want to bet against Russell Wilson being in a system. It really comes down to, are you going to protect for him? If you're going to protect for him and you got a couple playmakers, and I know, you know, Jerry Jeudy and Courtland Simmons, you've got some guys that that he can cook with, right? And so I would not want to bet against him. He could absolutely be the guy laughing on this. It just depends on what kind of quality you have around him. But he's getting what he wants.
Yeah.
He wanted a head coach with that philosophy. And again, you know, from Sean Payton to Mike Holmgren to Andy Reid. I mean, the list of guys that have won Super Bowls with that philosophy, like quarterback is the guy around which we base the entire franchise. There's been a lot of Super Bowls won with the type of philosophy that Russell Wilson was seeking.
Boy, that's just it's fascinating, and it's I tell you, Russ says, let's ride. I'm ready for this ride, Hugh. I don't know. It might be bumpy. It might be weird. We might have a lot of the same stuff happen here. We'll see.
Yeah. Hey, Brady, real quick, you asked me. I think he's going to get booed on Monday night,
yeah.
And I think at some point they'll bring him back. They'll put him in the Ring of Honor, and then he'll be cheered, and he'll be remembered for you bringing the Seahawks their first Super Bowl and all the things. Now, can I just say one thing? I've got this little pet peeve about the idea of 9-time Pro Bowler. Everybody's going to say this. You're going to hear this in the broadcast on Monday night. He's not a 9-time Pro Bowler. He's a 5-time Pro Bowl, which is prodigious.
Yeah.
But the four other times he played, he was an alternate. He's like the only big-time
yeah.
quarterback that plays as an alternate. But he's racking up those Pro Bowl counts to try and make the Hall of Fame in his legacy. He's the only big time the guy that does that. So at any rate, that sounds petty for me. It is petty.
Hey, I wish they'd get rid of the whole alternate thing anyway. Like if you weren't one of the whatever three, then we'll just take one quarterback or not
and
even have.
And a generation
it.
Ago, it was just two. It was two guys.
Yeah.
So now it's three. So now three guys get voted, and then generally the starters, you know, the Tom Brady says, I ain't playing in no Pro Bowl. And then so now there's alternates, and it's always been the young guys that are trying to make a name for themselves that say, I'll do it. But Russ is one of the few stars that says, oh, I'll do it. If I'm an alternate, yeah, let me play. You know, he goes in, plays a series or two, and then he gets to,
he's,
you know, his Wikipedia page. His Wikipedia page says he's a 9-time Pro Bowler. Stop it with that nonsense.
Oh, that's interesting. Hugh, I don't have much time now, but I do want to talk about Clay. Clay is an awesome young man. Crazy, crazy situation to be thrown in your first football, or your first start in college football, though, against Michigan.
Yeah, you know, I think Jay Norvell said it best. Michigan is just a little bit too much too soon. I mean, you're talking about, on the one hand, the last time Michigan played a game in there, they beat Ohio State for the Big Ten championship, and they went to the college football final four in their coach's, what, ninth year, Harbaugh? And meanwhile, you've got a team that was 2-6 a year ago in the Mountain West in year one of a coach. It's like how more disparate can you be? And yet these games take place. You know, there was a nice check, I believe it was 1.8, you know, and the players, including Clay, got to have a lifetime experience in a colossal stadium, 110,000. And so now you just say they can handle, after having experienced that, they can handle whatever college football throws at them, because the Crucible is not going to get much more difficult than what they face.
Yeah, no, I think that's the great way to look at it too, because you look down the road and there's certainly some decent opponents on that, but nothing like what we saw with Michigan. Did you have a chance? Again, Hugh Millen's joining us. His son is Clay Millen. What did you guys talk about afterward? I was really impressed just reading how you work with Clay, and you say things like, hey, I'm proud of you for being the dude you are. It's not like you have to be a great football player for me to be proud. It's just who you are. I love that relationship. But did you guys have a chance to talk in great detail after the game?
Yeah, we've talked a number of times. It's what you said. I never wanted to be that guy that says, oh, hey, I'm really proud of you if you threw 4 touchdown passes in a high school game. I've always said, I'm proud of you if you do approach the game the right way. If you throw 4 touchdown passes and you win, then I'm happy for you. And I make that distinction. So for Clay, did he prepare right? Did he lead right? Did he compete? You know, above all, was he a burning competitor? Was he poised? Did he show physical toughness? Did he show mental toughness and fight through adversity? I think, look, I'm a dad. You know, whatever I say, it's just a dad talking. So I think that all of those things were good. Now, you're going to have to throw for more yards and more touchdowns and win the football game. That has to happen. But, you know, I think Josh Allen, his first start at Nebraska, Nebraska was unranked. And I think he had 1 touchdown pass, 5 interceptions, and like a 52-something loss. You know, I mean, you know, it happens. And so what the challenge is don't let it discourage you. Make it, you know, just make it fuel you. You know, make it fuel you, like, okay. So that's just make it be a positive. Make it, as we said, you know, maybe this team, they could be fighting for a Mountain West championship at some point, and they can look back and they can say, hey, we've been there. We were there at Michigan. You know, we got this. I know that, for example, Justin Herbert's very first start, I was there as a Husky analyst, and Justin Herbert was against the University of Washington. The Huskies beat Oregon 70-14. Herbert was well under 200 yards. It's just, you know, just a dreadful day. But then a couple years later, those guys all were talking about, hey, we still remember that loss to Washington, 70-14. We've banded together, and then they won the Rose Bowl. They beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, and of course, Herbert's career has just skyrocketed. But those kind of moments that are so abjectly disappointing, they can be the fuel for you, and it needs to happen with Colorado State and Clay.
Yeah, I can't wait to see them. I think they're going to bounce back in a big way this weekend. Hugh, man, thank you so much. Let's keep doing this. I want to dig up some more stuff about Russell Wilson, because we want to talk to you a lot more, and then, of course, spend more time on CSU, my man.
Rock and roll anytime, Brady. Good to be with you, of course. Go Rams.
All right, man. Great work from you. Can't wait to catch up soon. All right, there's Hugh Millen. He's Clay Millen's dad, so we got the CSU connection. But he talks about the Seahawks for a living. He played for the Huskies. Michael, one of our producers, is a diehard fan. So now he's getting his autograph on the phone right now. He's trying to figure out how he can get that mailed to him. I played for the Broncos for a stint. Easy, Micah. Man, he was fantastic. So, wow. Wow. I want to unpack everything that he said coming up in Football Friday, because that, my friends, is what I've been talking about. My fear, my small percentage of fear, is what Hugh Millen just told us. We blew through the break. We literally removed a break for Hugh Millen. That's when you know you have a damn good radio segment. We'll be right back. Football Friday at 1. It's Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.